was preventable. World War II, he told Franklin Roosevelt, should have been called the Unnecessary War, as many said of the century's first great war, and could also be said of much of the post-1945 international strife. It may well be that a human affinity for struggle and conflict make war, whether among tribes, religions, or nations, inevitable. But heads of state have always had the power to influence events, especially at the end of World War II, when the defeat of Nazism, fascism, and Japanese militarism presented an uncommon opportunity for more rational, humane governance. The rise of new international conflicts, or the failure to secure a stable, more durable peace, can be blamed on a blundering generation of leaders around the world. If this had been a period when American, European, and Asian rulers were notable for their limitations, the lost opportunity might be more understandable. But the sitting and emerging chiefs of state were as able and effective a group of executives as we've seen in any one generation in modern times. This is not to suggest that they were so superior in understanding and judgment to most other preceding and subsequent heads of government that they could do no wrong. They were as vulnerable to human miscalculation as all of us. Still, they were impressively talented politicians, blessed by circumstances favorable to changing international relations for the better. But they didn't, or at least fell well short of what they might have accomplished. Why and how the world's leaders blundered is the focus of this book. At the start of the 20th century, some European thinkers saw the state of war as essential to a nation's survival. Not only did external threats from other countries that coveted territory and resources beyond their borders encourage national militancy between states, but the discipline of a command system also seemed likely to make citizens more productive and the nation more prosperous. And even more than any material benefits generated by a country at war were the intangibles: national pride in disciplined forces performing heroic deeds has had enduring universal appeal. Being too proud to fight has never been a match for courageous warriors ready to give their lives for some larger good. Yet while national leaders have always justified war by invoking the nobility of patriotic sacrifice, they've also made the case for war as a prerequisite for lasting peace. How many in the aggressor nations in 1914 or 1939, however, especially the mass of Germans who rallied to Adolf Hitler's marching orders, would have chosen war if they knew what costs and suffering these conflicts would produce, without the promised respite from bloodshed? The horrors of the years between 1914 and 1945 undermined the belief of even the most confident advocates of military action that they could turn the world toward long-term peace. The brutal trench warfare and strains on civilian populations of 1914 through 1918 that destroyed 18 million lives convinced some observers in the 1920s and 30s that total war between advanced industrial societies was too destructive to victors and vanquished alike to let countries ever fight again. As French Premier Georges Clemenceau said after 1918, war is a series of catastrophes that results in a victory. Although a formidable pacifist movement sprang up in Europe and America after 1918, millions of people, especially in the defeated nations, turned the war into a holy crusade. They prided themselves on having fought for a larger good, believing the sacrifice of so much blood and treasure a noble enterprise. This pride, combined with the loser's passion for revenge and the economic collapse of the 1930s, renewed millions of people's faith in the regenerative powers of violence. It allowed Hitler to launch Germany and ultimately all Europe and the world into the Second Great War in a generation.